Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
And welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, I'm Trevor Anderson, chart manager here at Billboard.
So if you listened last week, we flash back to 1997. We counted down the top 40 songs on the Billboard Hot 100 20 years ago. We're going either forward or back to 2007. This week, we're going to go 10 years in the past from 2017. We're going to count down the top 40 songs on the Hot 100 this week, July 2007.
I mean, I remember, it's so funny, I remember when some of these songs came out, it's particular, like how a song we'll mention later, Umbrella by Rihanna, I remember when that came out, and like how everybody in school was just like sitting, I remember sitting in AP US History, and like the person I sat next to, her name was Anita, shout out to Anita, we used to like just sing Umbrella back and forth because we thought it was so good.
Any more details about Anita you want to share with the world?
No, but Anita is great. She was the class valedictorian. That's about as far as we're going to get with Anita. Good. Gary's trying to be Wendy Williams over here and, like, you know, start just diving in. That's as far as we go.
That was a Billboard already. I'd started in 2006, so I remember seeing these songs on the chart for the first time when they actually happened. 10 years later, we're looking back now.
Well, I guess we can, as we walk through them, Gary can share any memories he had.
I get to finally use that knowledge now.
10 years ago, Gary was already, you know, predicting podcasts in the future. He was way ahead of his time.
10 years in the making, this podcast.
And here we are.
All right. We'll also chat with Joe Riccatelli, RCA Records Executive VP GM. 10 years ago, he was working with Pink and still is, and now 10 years later. She'd had kind of a downturn on the charts after many hits in the early 2000s. But by 2007, she was kind of in a weird place in her career. And the single You in Your Hand came out, really didn't do anything at first, wound up becoming a record-setting number one on the pop songs chart. So we're going to get the whole inside story from Joe on how that song took a long time, but eventually became a hit. And we asked Joe when we were over at RCA Records about other acts on RCA. So we'll get some sneak preview of other RCA music.
Well, let's do it.
All right, let's kick off the top 40 this week on the Billboard Hot 100, 10 years ago, 2007.
It's summertime. Ladies looking hot. Shaking up what they got. Elephant man and cat, come on.
We still riding on chrome. We still pulling up. I pull up at the club beat.
That's why they loving her. That's real, been the chick that they talk about. Damn is the words that come out their mouth. She look good, always without a doubt. Ask for it, she back and caking out. Come on.
All right, number 40. We kicked off the Hot 100 this week, 2007, with a pop act who was new at the time, Cat DeLuna, featuring Elephant Man, the song Wine Up. Number 39, someone who has had a few more hits since then, Rihanna. It's the first Rihanna song we'll hear, not the last, on the countdown. Remember Shut Up and Drive? Number 39 this week in 2007.
I do.
Interesting about that song. Samples New Order's Blue Monday. And Rihanna kind of started her career sampling some of these 80s hits, SOS, sampling Soft Cell. So this song kind of followed that format. She really hasn't done that since. She's gone in so many other directions, but Shut Up and Drive really took that 80s alternative lean. We know we're flashing back now because we're talking early Rihanna at this point and how much she's changed.
Yeah, I mean, this was really when Rihanna was, within the next year, really solidifying herself as a major major force and a major player in the pop world. You know, the Good Girl Gone Bad era was the one that really, you know, just put her on the map. I mean, this is obviously Umbrella was huge at this time, and within the next year, it's going to be the Take a Bow, Disturbia kind of transformation. So, you know, Rihanna really doubling down and making herself an established presence.
All right. We'll certainly mention Umbrella coming up as we continue on the countdown. Number 38, Wipe Me Down by Lil Boozy, featuring Fox and Webby.
That's, yeah. Okay, so this is one of those songs that is like eternally in the canon. This song is, I mean, obviously I'm sure this was everywhere around Atlanta especially. One of those songs that particularly, a lot of these groups kind of had these one-up bubbling hits. You know, we had Crime Mob a few years before. I mean, this is like the same time as Party Like a Rock Star is big. So a lot of these, I mean, It's Going Down, Young Jock had been out the year before. So a lot of these, you know, sort of Southern hip hop kind of one hit wonders popping around.
Feels like if there had been memes and YouTube had been, because YouTube was pretty new in 2007, maybe some of those type of hip hop hits might have had challenges or dances like they have now for these types of songs.
Probably. But I mean, this it's even great. Like, this is one of those songs that Wipe Me Down is still, you know, it's, it lives on. Like, trust me. I mean, you can see it all over social media. Like, people will reference it a lot, or you'll see, like, you know, a gif from some mention of it. I mean, it's not just a song that is obviously just lived in that moment. I mean, this is a song that the culture has really adapted, and it just gets you hype. You cannot listen to the song and not just feel yourself.
Number 37, Eve was new in the top 40. She was still going strong in the late, in 2007 with Tambourine.
With Tambourine, I was like, wait a minute, that song, okay, so that song was put out 2007. It was, though, like, supposed to be from this new album she had coming, and that album actually, I don't know what happened, that album never showed up. She put out an album in 2013, was her most recent, and, like, her first one since before this, but it didn't have Tambourine on it at all. Like, all those songs she had worked on in this kind of 2007 era seemed to have vanished and just... I mean, obviously, they live on as singles kind of out there, but never an album, never, I don't think, maybe even a video, I'm not even sure about. So I don't know what happened to this little lost era of Eve, but I heard Tambourine last week, believe it or not. I was out and I heard it last week. Still such a great song. I think it's so fun. I don't think it quite got the due that it should have, but glad to see it's getting some shine at least this week.
All right. And number 36, we heard Lost in This Moment from Big and Rich. Huge country hit. Their biggest country hit. It's their actually only top 10 and went all the way to number one on the Hot Country Songs chart. You might think of Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. Actually only got to number 11 on the country chart. So this song right there was their biggest country hit.
What was it, too novelty for country?
You know, lyrically, it was a little adventurous for some family-friendly country stations. But Lost in This Moment, love song. Nobody had a problem with that song.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to number 35.
All the homies, they know what I mean. Baby, let me show you how I lean.
Like a cholo.
Lay back, bounce in the car. When we do a dance, we do it like what?
Like a cholo.
Side to side, elbows up, side to side.
elbows up. Got your shot, elbows up, got your shot.
Like a cholo, all up in the club, 10 deep, looking for some highness. We on the creep.
We're gonna sing those songs that offend the senses. Gonna pop my pills from a best dispenser. Get washed up singers writing all my songs. Let's sing them every night so I don't get them wrong. Well, we all just wanna be big rock stars and live in hilltop houses driving 15 cars. The girls come easy and the drugs come cheap. We'll all stay skinny cause we just want.
You don't know nothing, come easy. You gotta try real, real hard. I tried hard, but I guess I gotta try harder.
I try so hard, can't seem to get away from misery. Man, I try so hard, will always be a victim of these streets. It ain't my fault.
Tell me what's wrong, dog. What the hell you damning about? I'm your homie, so just say what's on your mind.
Man, I didn't know that you were talking about her.
So, man, you telling me you know her?
You are knowing like a path to know his word.
We messing with the same girl, same girl.
How could the love of my life and my potential wife be
the same girl,
same girl,
same girl?
Man, I can't believe that we've been messing with her.
All right, and coming in at number 35, A Lean Like a Cholo. Everybody remembers that song, though, and, little, you know, people used to do a little cholo dance to it. Again, one of those songs. Kind of, I mean, this is also, I guess, a few months before Crank That comes out, and that probably is the, I mean, got to be obviously the best known of these kind of dance, sort of this first era of dance challenge going on. But Lean Like a Cholo was out. People used to do, I mean, like It's Going Down from 2006 had a little dance that went with the chorus there. Yeah. So, I mean, again, just... really the first, the predecessor, ancestral wave to all the stuff we've seen in the past couple of years, you know, from Watch Me to Juju on That Beat and all of that. So these are the OGs on that front. All right, moving on to number 34, we got Nickelback coming in strong with Rockstar.
It was a humorous rock song. It parodies the rock star lifestyle and a lot of rock. That I feel like that's what's been missing in rock music for a long time. Acts sort of making fun of the decadence of rock music. And rock music is pretty serious for what it is nowadays. And this song just totally went in the face of that. That's what made it so fun. I think that's why it connected, because they were sort of laughing at themselves.
Makes sense. I mean, obviously Nickelback, you know, would become the target of ridicule for so many people on the internet. So maybe they were a little ahead of their time with that as well. All right, and we'll keep on climbing to number 33 this week. An appearance from somebody we actually saw back on the 1997 chart as well. So 10 years later, still holding strong in the top 40. We got Bone Thugs and Harmony featuring Akon with the song I Tried. Bone Thugs obviously cementing their hip-hop legend at this point. Akon in the middle of a huge run himself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, it's kind of easy to forget because Akon has really been quiet, you know, for most of this entire decade, really. But Akon had a nice string of hits in that mid-2000s chapter. Would have been the time of Smack That, would have been the time of I Want to Love You, Don't Matter, earlier in 2007.
Yeah, there's other Akon coming up in the chart. His voice was so – it was on a lot of different hits, but it was so unique, or it still is so unique.
Oh,
yeah, it just –
100%.
It's a great voice. I can totally see why everyone wanted him to be featured on a lot of songs and why he had so much success with his own songs as well.
And, I mean, talented writer, producer as well. I mean, right. He was a, you know, 360 package. All right, and someone else who is the triple package of singing, songwriting, and producing, we got R. Kelly at 32. That's his duet with Usher, Same Girl. And if you guys remember at the time, Usher was obviously coming off the huge Confessions album we had seen with Yeah and Burn My Boo, Confessions Part 2, just really had ruled 2004. And a lot of people at this time were talking about, you know, R. Kelly had been sort of the R&B guy of the 1990s, Usher coming in the 2000s. And so people were really, you know, saying, you know, is Usher going to be the new king of R&B? Is he taking the crown from R. Kelly?
Right.
So I think that R. Kelly, you know, wisely came up with this idea for the two of them to get together and duet. An interesting song, too, because, I mean, it's kind of funny that they, it's like this little sort of back and forth dialogue about, you know, them not realizing that they're messing with the same girl, and eventually they kind of figure it out. And it's, so it's kind of funny that tongue-in-cheek way that, you know, R. Kelly had been doing Trapped in the Closet by this point, so he had kind of flexed that muscle already. And, you know, of course, with Usher on the track, I mean, it's great. All right, and climbing up to 31, we got, this is a trio of hitmakers who really, I mean, was indicative of the year 06, 07 in a nutshell. This is Give It To Me by Timbaland featuring Nelly Furtado and Justin Timberlake. So the song had peaked at number one earlier in the year. By this point, it had fallen back down to number 31. But if you remember the trio powerhouse of Nelly Furtado, JT, and Timbaland, you know, masterminding behind the scenes, this was huge. This was actually Timbaland's first foray into really being an artist on one of his songs. Nelly Furtado had the Loose album the year before, JT coming off Future Sex Love Sound as well. So, I mean, three of them together were, you know, they were a little collective there for a minute. Also, you know, kind of as we flash forward from 2007, interesting that I think I said in 2010, Nelly Furtado apparently did an interview with the Metro in the UK, and she actually says that she wishes they had not put out this song. She thought that, I mean, because most people probably don't catch this from the get-go. It's a little it's a diss song. It's a, you know, kind of veiled. Everyone has their own little target in their verse. Timbaland is supposedly going after Scott Storch. Nelly is beefing with Fergie. Justin, I'm not sure. Brittany might be in there somewhere. But apparently Nelly thought that it put a lot of negative energy out there. And she thought that, you know, looking back, she kind of wishes they hadn't.
All right, let's keep going. We're up to number 30 this week on the Hot 100, 2007.
Damn all these beautiful girls. They only want to do you dirt. They'll have you suicidal, suicidal when they say it's over.
Jay Young, Sean Kingston.
You're way too beautiful.
Top 40 hits this week on the Billboard Hot 100. 10 years ago, this week, 2007, we heard Beautiful Girls, Sean Kingston. He was rising, was actually the top gainer in airplay this week at number 30. It would go on to be a four-week number one debut hit for Sean Kingston. Really different sounding song at the time. Obviously, it sampled
Stand By Me by Benny King.
Right. So it had the familiarity, and it had, not just because his name is Kingston, but it had that reggae Jamaican feel to it. It wound up being a huge summer hit. You talk about hits that are just perfectly timed for summer. Beautiful Girls with that sound was just absolutely perfect for when it was out.
Yeah, I mean, that easy reggae, you know, kind of island vibe, definitely one of the big things. Sean Kingston from Jamaica as well, so, I mean, a natural tie-in right there. And one of the youngest guys we'd seen on the chart in a good while. I mean, it's only 17 when the song went to number one, so, you know, bringing it home for the teenagers as well.
All I can think of when I hear that song is Shoshana's karaoke version on Girls when she sang it.
Not Gary as watches Girls.
Apparently I just revealed that.
I didn't know. That's what you're going to learn this week on the podcast.
Number 29, Glamorous by Fergie featuring Ludacris. Very close to Nelly Furtado, who they may have been feuding.
Could have been. I'm still like, now I'm trying to dig up more info about that. But I think, and it's funny, I'm looking at a pop blog right now, and the first diss that somebody quotes is that one from Fergalicious. So, I mean, Fergie, again, also in the middle of this ginormous run in 2006, 2007. The album The Duchess had been out. And really, she'd worked with the Black Eyed Peas, obviously, that gave her the platform to do this. But even, I think most people may have been surprised that the solo album really had eclipsed anything the Peas had done to this point.
Absolutely. And then 2009, they would come out.
The Peas would get their revenge.
Fergie really, in some ways, kickstarted just the absolute level of superstar success they would rise to. And both Fergie and Nelly were both having good success. So maybe we just sort of call it a draw at this point.
Perhaps. And unfortunately, flash forward 10 years and Fergie no longer with the Black Eyed Peas. They've sort of parted ways and still waiting on that Double Duchess. It was supposedly supposed to be out at the top of the year. We heard a little bit from Fergie last year with MILF Money and some other songs, but still waiting on that sequel.
Yeah, there's a similarity between 2007 and 2017. At both times, which is just one Fergie solo album to that point.
Yes. That same thing with, I guess, Lauryn Hill, you know, at some point too. Yep.
All right. Moving on to number 28 in the Hot 100, Gwen Stefani featuring, of course, Akon, because it was 2007, The Sweet Escape. Got to number two. It feels like it could have been a number one hit for how well that song has lasted over the years. It's become a classic for Gwen Stefani.
It's kind of interesting because I think maybe it depends on when you got into Gwen Stefani or where you were when this song came out. Because I think for a lot of kids, like, you know, I was back in high school, so I think a lot of kids for us, Holla Back Girl was the one that we remember from this time more than any other thing. And who can forget the iconic B-A-N-A-N-A-S? That was that's all, you know, any stupid joke ended with. It was great.
Well, yeah, this is more of an adult kind of a song. Kind of reminds me still of Madonna's Cherish a little bit, kind of that bouncy 60s leaning sound. So, you know, Gwen went many different directions. This song, a little bit more on that adult side.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, one thing you would not have guessed at the time, I mean, really one of the last songs Gwen had put out before going on this really long break. Between projects, she had, you know, just gotten back with No Doubt together for a little bit there, showed up on The Voice as well, finally putting out her third solo album just last year. So
yeah, kind of similar to Fergie, just that she finally put out that album that took so long.
They put out some teasers around the same time, actually. I remember like some songs with Pharrell that Gwen had been working on as well. But yeah, Gwen beats Fergie to the punch.
All right, number 27, Hannah Montana, Nobody's Perfect. Not Miley Cyrus, technically it was, but billed as Hannah Montana. She's got another song coming up here on the countdown in just a little bit, but this is when the whole Hannah Montana movement absolutely exploded, and she had so many hits in 2006, 2007, this time. And number 26, we're going to start hearing from American Idol's Elliot Yameen. Not one of the winners, but he wound up with a pretty decent hit, Wait For You. Became a big hit. It was number 26 this week in 2007.
Yeah, he was, I think, third place finisher on the fifth season of Idol. So that was behind Taylor Hicks the year he won and Catherine McPhee. I mean, that's one of those great pop songs. And I remember a lot of people were disappointed because they thought Elliot, obviously a fantastic singer. But yeah, I mean, I didn't realize it was this big of its time. I remember liking the song, and I still do. But
yeah, it showed that, you know, Idol was so big, you didn't have to win to still just have so much recognition.
Yeah, and, I mean, Chris Daughtry proved that point extremely well as well. Jennifer Hudson, obviously, doing so great out there, too.
And 10 years later, we know Idol's coming back.
Face myself to cross our borders. that's all I need.
What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know?
It's my lip gloss is cool. My lip gloss be popping. I'm standing at my locker and all the boys keep stopping.
What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know about me? What you know?
It's my lip gloss is popping. My lip gloss is cool. All the boys keep jocking. They chase me after school. When it's time for lunch, my lips.
And then bringing up that next segment of five songs. We first heard number 25 this week on the Hot 100 back in 2007. The Hot Shot debut of the week. So that's the highest debuting song on the chart. Another Hannah Montana. We just heard her at number 27. Here again at 25 with Life's What You Make It, which is a very Hannah Montana song title, it feels like.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting too is you go back 10 years, Hannah Montana, number 25. And you go forward 10 years to this week in 2007, as we're taping this, Miley just went from number 25 to number 22.
Actual Miley.
The actual Miley with Malibu. So 10 years later, everything's changing around Miley on the chart, but she's right where she was.
She still got some, you know, the peacefulness is there. She was in Malibu chilling 10 years ago. Life's What You Make It. Very, very positive, relaxing, good vibes coming from the Cyrus camp at this time. All right, moving on to 24, we heard Linkin Park, What I've Done. So Linkin Park at that time, still holding strong. Obviously, they've been a force really throughout the entire decade and one of the biggest rock bands we'd see in all the 2000s. On the albums front in particular, you know, Meteora and Hybrid Theory were just huge sellers. And even 2007, still getting top 10s with What I've Done, which was a number 7 hit.
And here's what stands out as a difference between now and 2007. We heard Nickelback back at number 34 with Rockstar. And we just heard Linkin Park there with What I've Done. Both really heavy, very crunchy guitar-based songs.
You say grungy or crunchy?
Crunchy.
Okay.
A little crunchy. Mostly crunchy.
Continue.
But you don't hear that kind of rock music in the top 40 now on the Hot 100. We've got Imagine Dragons with Believer, which, you know, a little more trap based, and it's not that wall of sound like we heard back then from, you know, what Linkin Park made their name doing stuff like that. Nickelback too. So there's a main difference in the last 10 years. We're not seeing these really big rock songs like that cut through. And even now, Linkin Park's back. They just had a hit called Heavy, but sort of ironically titled because with Kiara, it's basically a pop song. So even though Linkin Park is still doing well now, they've really changed their sound to a softer sound, at least on that song.
Yeah, rock is the rock era over? Is rock out on its way out?
That
there's no more hardcore rock.
That question has come up, that should the rock era still be the name, you know, since the 50s when Rock Around the Clock came out? But yeah, I mean, at least the last 10 years or so, it's sort of been the pop hip hop era. Maybe rock could still come back. We don't know.
Holding out for a hero on that one. Rock might have a shot. Okay. But you did good, rock. If you don't make it anymore, you did good. Moving up to number 23 on the chart in 2007, we are going to talk about Pink, who we mentioned at the top of the podcast. We're going to go a little deeper into what she's been up to lately and talk specifically about the song You in Your Hand and how that led to a nice pop renaissance for her. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and finish out this little segment right here. Moving up to number 22, which back in 2007, you would have never guessed that this artist would be a future duet partner with Pink,
right?
In 2017. We're talking Kenny Chesney right there above Pink at number 22. Never Wanted Nothing More.
Yeah, but they're under the same label group, so there was that connection. But other than that, Pink hadn't really shown that she had any tendencies toward country at that point. So yeah, they had the song Setting the World on Fire, number one country hit earlier this year. But you know, Kenny Chesney's career is as strong as it ever was back then. That was his 12th Hot Country Songs number one. 10 years later, he has 23. So he's basically doubled just about his number one count in the last 10 years. So he was huge all the way through the late 90s into the 2000s. Another 10 years later, he's still absolutely one of country's biggest names.
I mean, the country stalwarts are, you know, longstanding and hard to knock down. I mean, you look at guys even like Tim and obviously Garth and that crew, what they've been able to do for so long.
He hasn't really changed his sound that much. It was sort of a testament to him that people like, you know, what the Kenny Chesney sound has been and still going strong now.
21 this week, Lip Gloss by Lil Mama. Now, of course, being in high school at the time, that song was, you know, that was obviously a huge song. It was so easy for people to, you know, dance along and sing along to. I mean, just kind of one of those novelty hits that people had seen. And trust me, if
you know, social media. I mean, social media was around at this time. Facebook had been out there. Twitter was just getting on its legs. But, you know, of Instagram and definitely more YouTube user content would have been out there. This would have been one of those songs that would have been synced everywhere. Again, it was just so easy with the snap clap beat to sing along to.
And lyrically, this was a big high school hit.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, your lip gloss is popping. You know, when you're too young for lipstick, but your lip gloss, that's what's up. That's what's up. So,
what kind of lip gloss did Anita wear? Do you remember?
Are we still on this topic? Like, literally all this time later, we're still there. What was the... Some little cherry squeeze. I don't know. What was popping at Claire's or whatever back then? I don't know. We'll leave Anita aside and we'll pick up another woman, Pink. As we mentioned before at the top of the podcast, we are going to dive into You and Your Hand, which really put Pink back on the map after kind of languishing in limbo for a couple of years. And to help us out with that, we're going to bring in our special insider interview this week, Joe Riccatelli, who is the executive vice president of promotion and general manager at RCA Records, who was there back in 2007 working alongside Pink to get this song really up to the top of the pop charts.
Yeah. So, you know, you look at Pink's career now, it's, you know, 17 years of hits, and you almost forget that there was a time when she wasn't automatic at pop radio. This was that time. She'd had all those big hits, Get the Party Started, but then...
Yeah, the Misunderstood album was popping.
But then the first single from her album in 2006, Stupid Girls, didn't quite connect. And then You and Your Hand wasn't even actually the second single. Who Knew came out first. And then that didn't really work. So You and Your Hand came out, and Pink suddenly just wasn't on the level she'd been at. So Joe really gives us a great story coming up here of how the song became a hit. It was record setting in terms of how long it took to get to number one on the pop songs chart. But it did. Her career has been totally back ever since then. We're talking 10 years now. And this was the song that really brought her back after that little career glitch.
And of course, when you get a guy like Joe, you can't just talk about one act. So luckily, we talked about some other RCA big names we want to mention and see what's going on with their projects as well. One guy we've already talked about on this podcast we want to revisit, Justin Timberlake,
right?
See what he's up to ever since Can't Stop the Feeling last year, huge hit, and see what that new album might entail. I guess if you talk about Justin, it always goes that you somehow Britney comes up as well.
Yep,
so we'll
does.
Talk about Britney Spears as well. And even some acts who were not even on the radar back in 2007.
Right.
We'll see what's up with Zayn. And probably one of the most interesting ones I'm interested in, at least, is seeing what's up with Kesha.
Yeah.
Supposedly, you know, seeing where she's at in 2017 as well.
Yep. So. All right. So here is Joe Riccatelli, again, Executive VP, GM of RCA Records on the Billboard chart.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Podcast.
Check it out, going out on the late night. Looking tight, feeling nice, it's a cockfight.
RCA Records.
General Manager, Executive Vice President, Promotion. RCA Records, Joe Riccatelli.
You introduced yourself so well,
problem.
Joe.
I'm used to it.
You can do that. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it last time.
So what we're doing this week is looking back, specifically 10 years, 2007, what was going on in the charts back then. And one of the songs that really stood out, because it was such an interesting story, was Pink, You and Your Hand. So we kind of wanted to get into what happened at that point. I mean, she'd been a big star for about 7 years at that point, but she'd had a little bit of a lull. We're actually looking back on the Hot 100. This became her first top 10 in 2007 in 5 years.
Right. I think what really happened was there was a soundtrack from Charlie's Angels 2, Full Throttle, with the song was called...
Feel Good Time.
That's the one. So Feel Good Time was released off of Charlie Angels' Full Throttle, and there's a lot of times with soundtrack records, they kind of put you into this weird spot because really soundtrack singles are for the movie to open. You know, that's it. And once the movie opens, the film company could usually really cares less about what happens to it. The film's open. And then, you know, it was a Columbia picture. She was signed to Arista. They had their other projects going on at Columbia at the time. So I'm sure that kind of found itself between a rock and a hard place and never really materialized. And she had been working on Try This under the Arista moniker for LaFace. And that album was released, I would guess, a year after that. Is that what the timeline looks like for you?
I think it was like November 03, like late 03, I remember.
Late 03.
Yeah. So late 03. And when would the soundtrack come out? It was the summer, right?
Feel Good. Yeah, Feel Good.
Because I'm sure Charlie's Angels was a summer.
Yeah, sure. That peaked in July 2003.
Right. So then Try This came out, and it was an interesting time for her. She was working closely with Tim Armstrong, and they did a great record together. And in fact, when you see her perform live, some of the tracks off of that album really go over very well. And 2004 was when LaFace came over to Jive, and that's where I met Pink. The very first thing that they actually played for us, her and Billy Mann came up to our conference room and played Dear Mr. President for about 10 people in our conference room. And I didn't really know her at the time, but I was just so blown away. And one of those moments where your jaw just drops open, you're like, wow, this is just pretty incredible. She finished the record, and then the first single released was Stupid Girls. And the video was so compelling, and she was so passionate about the track being the first single. And we're all in with her, as always, as we want to be with our artists to begin with. And she had a vision for that, and we really wanted to follow through on it. And from an airplay standpoint, that track peaked maybe 17, 16, 15, somewhere in that range.
17.
Top 40. Yeah, so at that point, we were in a weird spot because she had been coming off of three records that just did not fire. And as you know from talking with other record execs during the podcast, or even maybe some of the radio execs, when you start to get into a streak like that where we had three records that just didn't fire, they started really doubting everything that was going on. So you guys may or may not remember this, but the second release from that album was Who Knew?
Right.
So that record peaked at 41, and we never actually charted it, or 42, so it just was off the chart. It was a very frustrating time for us at the label at Jive, and it was very frustrating for her. And I remember vividly having this conversation with her. We were doing a broadcast for XM. Do you remember we were down in D.C. doing the broadcast for XM? And she did kind of what was their fishbowl version performance. It was a Sunday afternoon because she was doing a club tour because to get her back out on the road, we decided, let's do a small play club tour. And we were having this conversation backstage, and we're standing at like kind of in the loading dock of XM, and she's telling me about everything that's going on in Europe and people chasing buses and playing arenas. And she's like, why is it just not coming through here? And it was really frustrating for both of us. And that was in the summer. And then in the fall of that year, we had our BMG meetings, and Barry Weiss was running our company at the time, and Clive Davis had us all to the PlayStation Theater in New York, and we're playing music, and we played You in Your Hand, and our staff was in town, our promo staff was in town, and I remember having this conversation with them, like, come hell or high water, we're going to get this project back on track, because it was too important for us to have a girl from Philadelphia that was huge outside of America and not be big here. It just was too frustrating.
And she'd had so many hits before that.
With Misunderstood, which was obviously a gigantic record.
Right.
So we started working that record in the fall of 2006. So we were grinding, We get to the holiday break. We come back in January, and literally we're down in spins in January. And I'll never forget this. This was one of those weeks where it was rubber hits the road, like either this record's going to go or not go. And we were working really hard. And I could still remember a few emails that I sent out to a couple, some choice words to some program directors about Pink and how I felt about her and how, like, I felt we were getting screwed. And ultimately, it was right around March, I want to say, all of a sudden the record started to really kick in and Call Out Research started to come back and You and Your Hand really started to build. And then we got as far, I want to say, in May, the very first week of May, we actually got to number one on that track. That was the longest run of a song that actually came on the chart.
Right. It was a record on mainstream. It was, top 40, longest run at that time.
It's not anymore, though. I think something else
just clicked recently. By a few weeks. But, you know, the chart at that point was 15 years old. So you're talking a record run to number one, which shows just how much you believed it and how much it ultimately, radio really did like it, just took time.
That's exactly what happened. And to that point, we believed in her so much. And to this day, Who Knew is a song for me that whenever I hear it, it's a song kind of like Tears for Fears, Everyone Wants to Rule the World, that whenever I hear Who Knew, I just love that song. It's just one of those records for me. We just decided to go back and take a second swing at it, and we actually took it from the first time, not charting, to getting it to number one.
Right.
And then the rest kind of rolled from there for us, and for her, more importantly.
The lyrics to You and Your Hand obviously played into the song's success.
It definitely did. It was really active that way, and it was really funny. This was a record that Pink did, that Alicia did, with both Max and Luke at the time, who worked on this project. And Max and Luke came into New York, and they took us to dinner down at Tribeca. Was it Nobu?
Was it Haru?
Yeah. Well, we went to dinner with them anyway. They took us out to dinner and really had a great time with us because they were so excited with that record going the distance. Yeah. And it was funny because I remember driving downtown with Max in the SUV, and he played us the guitar lick for So What, which he's like, I have a guitar lick for the next single. I want you guys to hear it. He played it for us in the SUV going downtown from the old Sony building down to Haru for dinner.
Yeah. At that point, she's been on this run ever since. So it really kickstarted the rest of her career to this point, the last 10 years. Been pretty much nonstop hit since.
Yeah, and she is always really quick to point that out, and she's nothing but has been so supportive to this promotion staff and to me in particular over the years, and the shout outs that she's given me over the years. And even down there on the floor, you basically can see when you guys gave her the Billboard Woman of the Year. It's, you know, that's how she is, and that's who she is. And she's so warm and just so, I love working with her. I look forward, you know, to seeing her. I'm going to see her here shortly. So I'm excited about, you know, getting on track again.
Trevor and I were talking about how many different sounds she's had in her career, from rhythmic to pop, the country number one hit with Kenny Chesney last year.
Huge record.
The folk album.
Was there like any sort of conscious decision from, you know, when you saw how Who Knew did, that she say, you know, this is a lane that I maybe didn't explore a whole lot before. Like, now I want to go full throttle with that?
Well, what happened with that particular project was, in fact, we had gone to Toronto. I want to say it was at the beginning of the Truth About Love tour. Very beginning of the tour, she had been close with Dallas Green, and Dallas lives in Toronto, or is from Canada, and we ended up, you know, connecting with him, and she said, I'm going to work on something with him when I'm done with this project, and it was kind of just her following through on something and an artist that she really liked, and I think that record turned out amazing. It didn't get all the, you know, support from airplay, but we didn't really expect it to get that going in, to be honest with you.
Got a little adult alternative here.
We definitely did. Adult alternative, never, which is what we wanted.
Right.
Which she had not had before, and then obviously onto country, onto great things. And we were just looking recently at Just Like Fire off of the soundtrack from last summer, how well that record really eventually did. And I was looking at the year-end charts recently, and I want to say it finished in the top three at Hot AC Radio for the year 2016.
Yeah, there are very few artists that you can think of like Pink who just cover that many lanes in her sound. That's a sign of true artistry, of just how many different sounds she's done over, you know, almost 17 years of her career at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, she's fantastic.
What can you tell us about new Pink music? What's coming next?
She's in the studio. We're kind of wrapping up right now, and we're going to be expecting some new music from her, you know, sometime this year. And I don't think we're going to have to wait very long. And it's exciting because she's really excited about it. And I think we're going to really have a fantastic, you know, end of the year run here with this album, and into next year when she'll get back out on the road, I'm sure.
Anything you can tell us about the sounds?
You know, she's working with a lot of different producers, and the thing about Alicia is that she will keep going till she feels she gets it right, and I kind of feel like the recording process for her, though it may be strung out over a long period of time, when it's actually completed, it'll be so spot on and A+, and I think the wait will be well worth it, and I'm really expecting her to come back and you know, really have a monstrous album for us.
How about her work ethic? I mean, she became a mom again this year for the second time, and already, you know, looking to get back out there on the road, like you said. I mean, that's incredible.
And she's doing some festival dates this summer. She's playing 2 dates up in Canada in the middle of July. She's down here in Atlantic City also playing a date on the beach in the middle of July. She's playing the V-Fest in the UK, middle of August. She's doing a show in San Diego, middle of August. And then she'll, you know, probably get serious about touring next year.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean,
it's exciting.
I know. Mothers can do it all, truly. It's crazy.
She can. She's one in a million. One in a million.
She's still doing all the acrobatic stuff?
This tour will be a little bit different because she'll be playing more outdoor type venues because they're festival dates. But I'm sure that when we see her come back around next year, you'll be seeing that.
I never came to the beach or stood by the ocean. I never sat by the shore under the sun with my feet in the sand, but you brought me here, and I'm happy that you did, 'cause now I'm as free.
While we have you here, Joe, we want to ask you some other RCA acts.
Sure.
What you guys got going on? Start with Miley, because Malibu's doing pretty
well. Yeah, that's been a fantastic story, because Miley had me over to Adam Lieber, her manager's house, in January, and she played me 5 or 6 songs that day, and Malibu was actually the last song that she played me. And in the initial conversation that we were going there for, there was a particular track that she was leaning towards as her first single, but when she played Malibu, she said, she texted me right after the meeting. She's like, I saw your energy shift in that meeting. I think we should go with this as the first single. And she was dead serious about it. And I said to her, okay, well, our record's fantastic lyrically. I really think it could be a home run. You're going to have to work on maybe putting a little tempo underneath it. Let's get some drums in there. And she took great direction. We had a sit-down conversation with John Ivey and with the iHeart team and even with Michael Martin prior to. And I brought the feedback back to her. She's like, okay, cool, I got it. She went back in with Oren, and she really worked on making the record more top 40 friendly. And you saw how, and you see currently how well this record's really doing for us overall. It's a top 10 record for you guys a few weeks back. It's going to be a top 10 airplay record here when everything is said and done. And the thing about this record to me that's most important, and similar to Pink, it's very much from the heart. Her lyrics are very much from the heart. She's passionate about what she's saying and what she believes in. She's made a complete lifestyle change, and it comes across in everything she's doing right now. And this is where she is. And it's exciting to be part of that, you know, that part of that life with her.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of like what we see with Pink. You know, this is a record compared to her last record. If you look at Bangers, you know, that was obviously Mike Will influenced, more hip hop, you know, but this Malibu seems to be opening her up to a new lane of audience that maybe she hadn't had before. People thought she was maybe too young, you know, not really into that, but I think a more adult, I mean, certainly the country influence is kind of there. We saw at the BBMA, she performed it a little more country. So in a way, it's kind of like Pink, who I think when people first saw Pink come out, you know, they saw the pink hair and they thought she was, you know, she's for the kids. And then now we see, I mean, as we mentioned just before, huge hits on adult radio, alternative. So in a way, they kind of parallel each other, yeah?
Well, I think it's indicative of really artists growing and getting older and seeing different things in their life. And if you think about Pink, when she started with the first single, she was probably 19 years old, and she lived through a lot over that period of time. You said 17 years she's been recording, so that's maybe 18 when she first did that record. Right. And Miley, obviously, she grew up in the public eye as a young girl, and you know, you saw her go through different phases in life, and it's not really like anybody else. It's not different than you or me. When I was 18 years old, I was doing different things than when I was 25, and you know, the same thing goes for artists. They're people in the same matter, and I think this is more true to Miley's kind of who Miley is and who she wants to be. And that's one of the reasons why I think people are really responding to it, because it's really honest music. And, you know, you want that to be the case.
You just added the Tiesto remix too.
We did a great remix package, to be honest with you. We have two more remixes coming out, which will be out when this airs. It'll be Dylan Francis and Alan Walker. Both great remixers. The Tiesto remix came out last week. The Him mix came out 2 weeks ago. Lost Frequencies remix was added yesterday to Chill on Sirius XM. So we're pretty much really covering all bases. And that's the other thing. She's been so open-minded about the remix package. And we've got some excellent remixes on this track. And the response on it's been phenomenal, as you guys could see.
Hey, Trevor, you mentioned the country version she kind of did on the BBMAs. Has there been interest from country? Are you planning to take it to country?
Well, we're still having that conversation. But, you know, it's funny with country radio, and I'm sure you guys know this. I cannot think of a record. I can't think of anything that's reverse-crossed. Country programmers in general, and my experience with them is they really want artists that are invested into the format, into the lifestyle.
Right.
The funny thing is she actually is. But until we're really ready to kind of make that move, but I wouldn't be surprised if we decide to go down that road.
All right. A year ago at this time, you were on the podcast, and you said that Sia, Cheap Thrills, you thought was going to be one of the biggest hits of the summer.
Yeah.
It was just around number 40 on the Hot 100. Yeah. You were correct on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That is my job, by the way, is to be correct on those things. So, yeah, that's been she's been quite the journey for us. She, along with Pink or Miley, they're amazing artists because the creative and where the creative comes from and how she's really able to find her own lane and still stay true to who she is. And I think, again, you talk about those three artists, they are true to who they are. They are true to themselves. And there's nothing more important in music than that. And everything revolves around being true to yourself. And Sia has definitely been that. And she's shooting a film right now that she's working on. It'll probably be sometime next year. And she's in great spirits. And she's been working with our artist Labyrinth a little bit. And I think that, as you know, from the Wonder Woman soundtrack, they put that track out on the end credits. That has done very well from a Shazam standpoint. It's an interesting record. So, yeah, she's always great.
'Cause you brought the flames and you put me through hell. I had to learn how to fight for myself. And we both know all the truth I could tell. I'll just say this is I wish you farewell. I hope you're somewhere praying, praying. I hope your soul is changing, changing.
Keeping this vein of all these female stars on RCA. Been a while since we've heard from Kesha, obviously, with new music.
Yeah, you know, Kesha's been unable, unfortunately, to put music out just due to, you know, what she's been dealing with over the last few years. But she's pretty much wrapping up, and we're pretty excited about it right now. And she's, again, poured her heart and soul into this music, so it's really exciting.
Britney Spears? New music from Britney?
I don't think at the moment. I think with Britney, I think that she's going to focus on wrapping up her Vegas residency, and I think she actually wants to, you know, figure out what her next moves are. But it's always great to work with Britney, and you know, she's amazing. And we were just talking about Blackout recently. I was talking to Larry Rudolph about Blackout and how that album really did change the game for her and for a lot of people. And it wasn't something that I think that we were really expecting at that moment in time. And it was an album that ultimately, when you go back and look at it, gained momentum as we went along and really built her up and really took her to her next phase in her life.
Also, sort of goes hand in hand, I guess, with Britney historically. Justin Timberlake had the big hit.
I don't know what
year.
You mean.
we'll fill
yeah,
you in.
Like he, yeah. Justin is always a force of nature, and he's constantly working, and he's in the studio, and we're hoping to hear something from him, you know, shortly. It's always exciting because he's always challenging himself and always pushing the envelope. He never settles, and I think when we were talking last year, Can't Stop the Feeling had just started to really go, obviously that turned into, you know, being one of the most played songs at all formats last year and was Radio Song of the Year at the BBMAs. Again, you know, it's so funny with him, and I think I mentioned this the last time. He's like, when he played it for me, when I went to the studio, he's like, Joe, I've got an easy one for you.
Right.
Because everything, you know, for him, he feels is difficult. But it's not necessarily true, but...
Wait, you'd done some more R&B leaning stuff, and this was just so right down the middle of the road, pop hit.
He's hard on himself. He is hard on himself, and that's what makes him such a great artist.
And I know, I think people saw a couple times before, he was working on something sort of Tennessee-inspired. He said he was writing with Little Big Town. Any intel if that's still the direction that he's looking at?
Well, I think Drink You Away was a record that really, if we went back and had to do it again, I don't think it actually ended up really getting the accolades that it did get. And I think he felt inspired off of that track, off of the 2020 Experience Part 2. Live, it was actually one of the very best live songs that he ever does and that he does now. So I think that was an inspiration for him, and I wouldn't be shocked to see more, you know, in that vein. Not that I know anything, but I wouldn't be shocked.
And I mean, of course, the reception he got when he did that song with Chris Stapleton back at the CMAs. I mean, my mom was texting me and everything.
And that was actually the impetus for us to put the record out and to really push it and try to work it at country a little bit. And I actually was calling country programmers myself on that, because a lot of the country programmers now, as you know, are former pop programmers. Right. So I have longstanding relationships with them. And some of them really gave it a try, and some had a lot of success with it. And there's some of the pop stations that had success with it as well. And I kind of feel like, you know, that was inspiration for all of us, and realize that door can swing both ways, but it's challenging at the same time.
Zane?
Zane is working on some music right now again, and you know, he's again one of those Rubik's Cubes types of artists, and he's so creative, and he's an amazing vocalist, and I wouldn't be shocked to see us have something here in the next couple months on him.
And one thing we kind of talked about with One Direction, you know, back, obviously they're all kind of out in the same place. Is that weirder for you guys to like sort of, do you even think about that? You know, trying to, okay, where's Harry doing, like, and what's Niall up to, and sort of navigating that road where it's not, you know, all at once or anything like that?
It really doesn't come into the conversation, because all five of them have distinctive directions. And even, you know, Louis Tomlinson, who's just finishing up now and putting something out with Psycho here later on next month, is a different direction than the other four. So, so for all five of them, I don't think we really think that way, because I haven't really felt in my conversations with top 40 programmers that they say, well, I'm playing Niall, so I can't play Liam, so I can't get in touch Louis, or I've got to wait for Zane. I don't really get those conversations, you know? And if you think about all five of them, I mean, Harry obviously made a fantastic album start to finish. Zane has had a ton of success. You look at Niall right now, and you look at the success he's having with Slow Hands, and you look at, well, Liam's doing, and all of them are different directions. All of them.
Good songs are good songs.
That's right, 100%. It's song-driven format at the end of the day. I mean, artists do play into the discussion, but it's song-driven.
How excited were you guys that this Kygo song with Selena Gomez become bigger than you thought it was going to be?
Actually, not me personally, because I remember when Andrew Watt came in to play it for us, it was right before the Christmas break, and I said to Peter, I'm like, Peter, this is the number one record. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, it got complicated because of Selena, and we ended up sharing chart responsibilities on it. But again, it was a lesson for us on how the feature really can drive the track. And when we heard the record, it was no doubt in my mind it was a number one. And it was one of those songs that just cut through. And she's great on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's such a mix. I mean, you can certainly hear that it's such a core dance record, but it has the pop hook. And, you know, what an odd chorus it is when you think about it. But it's so catchy.
You know, and it's his melody. Ultimately, Kygo on that melody, on the keys, on the piano, really makes that song stand out. You know, the lyrics on it are fantastic. And I know even when Andrew was writing it, he said to me he thought right away this would be a great record for Selena because they're close. That's really how it played out, which was fine because it was really great. Because it really established an artist for us at Top 40 that we were a little bit frustrated with coming off of Firestone. We felt we should have gotten further with them.
And that was a new single.
With Ellie Goulding doing well at Shazamming early on. We're kind of just getting into the meat of it now. It's always hard to compete with a record that's number one when you're trying to follow a record. So it's been exciting working with him. He's always great to work with.
And new artists? What are you guys working on in terms of people I haven't mentioned so far? I see a Frankie Cookie hanging over your
We're definitely working on Frankie. She is somebody that's near and dear to our heart. She's part of the Little Golden Retriever imprint here at RCA. Stuff that I am working on setting up for right now. We have two side projects here coming off of Pentatonix. Superfruit is going to be Scott and Mitch putting out an EP, which will be out by the time this actually runs. But I really love the music that they're making. Kirsten, also the female vocalist from Pentatonix, will be putting out a solo project as well that we're really excited about. Something that we've been passionate about and working on for a while is LP, the song Lost on You. We did a deal with the BMG Rights Group to promote it, so we're doing the marketing and promotion on it. And it's now top 30 on the Hot AC chart and doing well. And then
she was a chart breaker feature for us.
And
Billboard this
year. In this issue.
Yeah,
with the one with Diplo on it. That's absolutely right. And so that's been a really passion project for us overall. I would be remiss if I don't mention Bleachers and Jack Antonoff. He's somebody we are really, really believe in as an artist overall. And he's just been a great friend to the company. He's an amazing writer, producer. Green Light might be my favorite song this year from Lord that's been released. I just love that record. He's amazing to work with. I love working with Jack.
Busy as always, Joe.
My friend, you have no idea.
All right, great to hear from Joe on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. And maybe of all that stuff we talked about, Trevor, new Kesha music sounding like we've never heard her before. Such great vocals on that new song.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard that, it took me about 2 minutes because I kept thinking she was somebody else. I still can't quite figure out who I think she was. But, you know, I mean, just awesome to see that side of her, because I think for so long so many people thought that, you know, she was sort of this label creation. I mean, she's obviously like just this fun party girl who really didn't have a whole lot of depth to her. And, you know, now people are really, you know, able to see that she's got some true musicianship under there, and it's great stuff to hear.
You could just feel the emotion in the vocals, because obviously the song means a lot to her after everything she's been going through.
Yeah, I can only imagine it must have been very hard for her to write and record this whole song, obviously, given everything that's happened in the past couple of years. And maybe things, you know, we didn't even know about while Animal and Warrior and all her big hits were being recorded.
Right.
So at least, you know, I'm glad that she was able to sort of work through this, it seems like, put it into music, which I'm sure was a great outlet for her as well, and bounce back on her feet. And I think, obviously, you know, she's gotten a lot more fans than she already had, I'm sure, and a lot more respect from the industry as well. So I think, you know, everyone's rooting for her, and how can you root against that story?
And just new music from Kesha. It's been a while, so we have new music. That's great to hear. All right, let's continue on. 2007, going back again, back 10 years. The top 20 now are up to this week on the Billboard Hot 100.
I hope the ring you gave to her turns her finger green. I hope when you're in bed with her, you think of me.
No, no.
we got a triple serving of idols up in this joint.
Lots of idols. Number 20, Kelly Clarkson, we heard, with Never Again. Kind of an interesting time. We talk about how Pink had a little career lull. It was Kelly Clarkson after the Breakaway album had all those huge hits. She then put out My December, had this song. It was a top 10 hit, got to number 8, Never Again, but it was the only top 10 hit from the album. And this is, she was, you know, having some dealings with the label that she wanted to go in her own direction. It got kind of public, and she would have bigger comeback a couple years later with My Life Would Suck Without You and that whole album. But this was a little period where she wasn't quite as big as she'd been before, and how she'd be big again a couple years later.
Yeah, I think this was an album that was sort of a personal milestone for Kelly Clarkson, the My December album of this time. Like you said, there were some dealings with the label that made it kind of tricky, and she and Clive Davis in particular had that big back and forth.
Yeah.
After Breakaway, of course, having so many huge hits, maybe, you know, she wanted to, you think the label wants, you know, a Breakaway part two, and maybe Kelly didn't want to do that. I mean, the songs on this My December are a little darker.
Yeah.
I mean, even everything from the album cover, you know, and that dress at the bottom of the staircase and everything. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those albums that she really personally wanted to put out there. Maybe didn't have the biggest success that she would have hoped, but I think for her, maybe not that big a deal.
Right. And you see that throughout pop history, even, you know, Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, she had to kind of do her own thing for a while, that, you know, it was just her own vision. The same thing with Kelly Clarkson. You could go back to, you know, the 60s, the Monkees were this TV studio creation. They wanted to do their own sound. One Direction members now, we're seeing that they're certainly not putting out, you know, the exact same sound as you know, the absolute pure pop of One Direction. So you see that artists grow. This is a great example of that.
And right above Kelly Clarkson, we got another American Idol alum in Daughtry.
Right. Home, another big hit from Daughtry. There's a lot of idol here. So Daughtry at number 19, former top 5 hit.
And again, a person who also, you know, points out that you don't have to win Idol to be successful. Chris came in 4th place in his season and still got a number 1 album out of it. You know, it was a huge 2006 for them. Carried on in 2007.
Yeah, when we've recapped a lot of idols over the years, it's been Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, and Daughtry as like the 3 most successful for a long time on the charts. So yeah, 4th place finisher, but talent is talent. It'll win out. All right, a couple hip hop hits, sort of the time, I guess in some ways, from Lloyd and Huey. The numbers 18 and 17, Pop, Lock, and Drop It, number 17.
Yeah, one of the big things too from Pop, Lock, and Drop It, which is kind of one of those songs that is so 2007, but indicative of also, I think it was on the Stomp the Yard soundtrack. And you kind of forget, there was a stretch of movies in that time that was really, really hip-hop centric, really college-oriented. There was like Stomp the Yard was at that same... Okay, Stomp the Yard was out there.
Okay.
Duh, that's what came from Stomp the Yard. There was ATL was out like in 2006. T.I. had been on that. You Got Served had been out a couple of years, I think, as well. Probably a few others that I can't even think of, but a really good time for those kind of movies. And one of the best things about those soundtracks from those movies over the years is they gave some hometown stars some shine that they may not have otherwise gotten. You know, it's not just the Jay-Z's and the 50 Cent's out there getting hits. I mean, Huey just kind of, you know, coming out of nowhere, getting a nice top 10 from his work with the film.
See, I think of 2000 era movies. I think of Borat.
I mean,
no, that's, soundtrack.
That's a, I mean,
no,
you know, soundtrack. That's a fantastic hits. Movie, too. I mean, different direction, but yeah, yeah.
If we're going to go back to 10 years, I got to mention Borat.
Pamela Anderson.
Yeah. Co-star, even if she didn't know it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. God, what a process that must have been for her.
All right. And another idol at number 16, Carrie Underwood, Before He Cheats. You know, what's interesting about that song, it crossed over, but it's such a core country song. Carrie Underwood didn't have to make a song that was so poppy for that to become such a hit. And I'm sure lyrically, it's just so relatable, the lyrics in that song.
Is it relatable? Do most people know it?
You've never had your car keyed by an angry ex?
No, no, I have not. Luckily, I guess I'm missing out, apparently. But yeah, I mean, that song, truly in the vein of some of those great country sort of scorned woman classics. I mean, this goes back, you know, way back to Loretta Lynn wrote so many of those. Dolly Parton had a few. Shania Twain would have kept that same kind of energy going forward. And now Carrie, you know, enters her Hall of Fame entry with Before He Cheats. I mean, it's just a great song, especially I love the detail they give to what she does. She, you know, she keys the car and she writes her name in the seats, and
Louisville Slugger gets a little plug.
Not just any bat. She takes a Louisville Slugger to both headlights and slashes the tires too. So don't cross Carrie Underwood, or you might be in for a nice bill at the auto shop.
Mike Fisher has been warned through this.
Yes, Mike. Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. We're up to number 15 now. 10 years ago.
All right, kicking off that segment, we heard Fall Out Boy's Thanks for the Memories. So a nice year for Fall Out Boy as well. Coming off that second album, Infinity on High, that really broke them into the stratosphere. They already made waves of their debut from Under the Cork Tree, but this ain't a scene. It's an arms race, a number two hit earlier that year, this being the follow-up single. Unfortunately, it has that infamous number 11 peak. So. Ooh,
a number two and then a number 11.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, and I guess, you know, obviously the lead single has, you know, the momentum and the energy and they're back.
I think this is a better song, pop leaning song, great chorus.
I think it's held up longer. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, This Ain't a Scene is fun for the shouting and you can kind of the weirdness of the lyrics, like what this ain't a scene, it's a goddamn arms race. Okay. But definitely much more in the Sugar We're Going Down kind of scorn lover vein for this song.
And it's another rock song here in the top 40. A little different than the Linkin Park and the Nickelback. A little more pop punk, which was such a huge sound in the late 2000s. So this is a great example of another side of what rock was back then. And again, they were louder than anything we're hearing now in rock for the most part.
All right, moving on to number 14. We got the nice team up of T-Pain featuring Akon with the song Bartender. Again, 2007 was like T-Pain's playground in a lot of ways.
That the title just could be 2007.
It really could. Obviously, T-Pain, not the first person to do it, but really became the ambassador of auto-tune in 2007. We'll also hear from another T-Pain song, probably the most famous of his hits, later in the podcast. And Akon, once again, we saw him down there with Gwen Stefani, also and Bone Thugs and Harmony. So right. Our third Akon spotting of the 2007 chart. And Akon himself, you know, the past 6-7 months have been huge for him leading up to this point. He'd already had hits with I Wanna Love You and Smack That right at the end of 2006. Earlier in 2007, Don't Matter was also a nice hit for him. And of course, he's one of those people too that got that early branding in. Every time it's Akon song, you heard that convict.
That's
like,
right.
You knew, like, oh, that's Akon. All right, moving on to number 13. We got another breakout of 2007, Hurricane Chris and A Bebe. Again, just one of those sort of southern hip-hop songs that I think people just love to bounce to. It's got an easy kind of going feel to it. I mean, the hook is generally just A Bebe. And number 12, we got Fabolous and Ne-Yo doing Make Me Better. Ne-Yo also enjoying kind of the sophomore season. He'd broken out in 2006 as an artist really for the first time with So Sick and some of those other tunes. Had been, of course, writing and producing in the background for a couple of years, but really making his way out there into the forefront. And Ne-Yo, again, one of the great, you know, hook artists of this time, doing some nice work there.
So Sick is years later, and I'm 11 years later. That's a good song that really, I think that holds, not that you hear it a whole lot, you know, radio or wherever, but it really holds up years later. It's a great melody.
Yeah. Very fun melody with the kind of little clapping, like, intro that it invites to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like the little hand claps in the hook are good, and it's just a pretty creative, you know, twist on on just, you know, being lonely after a heartbreak.
And more Timbaland at number 12 on Make Me Better produced the song and co-wrote it. So just another example, even if he wasn't the credited artist, of just how big Timbaland was 10 years ago.
And how many checks Timbaland must have been getting at the time, too. All right, moving up to number 11, somebody we mentioned a little bit earlier. T.I. is making waves on this chart at number 11 with Big Things Poppin', Do It. So the song continuing sort of T.I.'s run at the time. Remember, he had broken out in a huge way in 2006 with the album King. What You Know was a smash hit, especially on the rap and urban charts. And now, as he said, in Big Things Poppin', he dominated 06 and he's going right back. So taking no time off. And of course, not only is 2007 going to be a big year for him, 2008 is going to be a humongous year,
right,
when he's got the Paper Trail album. And in the coming year, it'll be Whatever You Like, Live Your Life, and Dead and Gone with Justin Timberlake.
So. Yeah, and Whatever You Like and Live Your Life, but two hits at the same time. So for that later part of 2008, it was all T.I. at that point.
Yeah.
All right, we're up to the top 10, 10 years ago this week.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go. I'd rather be. And who would have thought that you could be the one? Summer love, you see, this just can't be summer love.
Numbers 10 through 6 that we just heard. And number 10, you hear that now, Trevor, bittersweet now, obviously, at the time. Everyone was singing the chorus to Rehab, and it's just sort of a fun, you know, kind of a novelty song in some ways. But by 2011, when we lost Amy Winehouse, the song would take on a whole different meaning at that point.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, still one of the best songs probably ever recorded, you can make a fair argument for. I'm just so unique in its sound. I mean, obviously, it has elements of that sort of 60s, environment that it came from, but it didn't feel like a knockoff or a ripoff or anything like that. And yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, it's sort of one of the most ironic songs, I guess, out there, given, you
right.
know, eventually what happened to Amy. Side note as well, this song also, people probably didn't realize this at the time, Mark Ronson produced it, would not have really been, you know, a household name or anything like the time. Now people also know him as, of course, the creator of Uptown Funk with
right.
Bruno Mars, so nice to see Mark Ronson getting some shine on the charts as well.
This song peaked at number 9. It was at number 10 this week in 2007. But I'm sure, you know, most people remember a number 9 peaking this song, Rehab, than, you know, some of the other number 1s even we mentioned because of the whole mostly sad story around Amy Winehouse.
And the fact that it's just a great song.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
one of the greatest of all time. You're putting it in that level.
I mean, I would. I think so. I mean, it's from everything from the vocals to the sound to the subject matter and the way she wrote about it. I mean, a very tongue-in-cheek kind of fun song.
All right. Number 9, more Justin Timberlake, Summer Love. The Future Sex Love Sounds album was still going really well. It's about a year after its release in 2006. It was on to another top 10 hit.
Yeah, I mean, this had already been three number ones that had already come and gone for Justin. So really just continuing that trend and solidifying, I mean, his superstar status. The first album, Justified, of course, had, you know, done huge numbers, huge waves with the singles, but nothing on this level that just made him sort of the reigning king of pop at the time.
And he was actually go way down the chart here for a second to number 98 this week, as Summer Love was still in the top 10 until The End of Time was debuting at number 98. That would go on to be a hit. That was the Beyonce duet.
Yeah, would eventually have sort of this remix with Beyonce added on. So yeah, I mean, we were spoiled. We got Justin and Beyonce on the same song.
Number 8, Girlfriend, Avril Lavigne, her first, or to date only, number one hit on the Hot 100, but Complicated got to number 2. Girlfriend was her first number one hit 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I think for some people, this kind of caught them by surprise because it was more poppy than anything Avril had ever done up to this point. So, you know, also kind of borrows some of that refrain and hook from the Ramones, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend.
That's right.
Except she wants to be your girlfriend. But yeah, I mean, obviously great to see that Avril, you know, had that spunkiness to her still that she retained from sort of the, I hate to say like emo days because it's not emo by any means, but I remember in middle school, everyone thought they were like moody.
Right.
You know, that was kind of their soundtrack.
And I remember the ironed hair, that really flat hair. So I started recently when Michelle Branch came back, she was watching a video of herself back then. She's like, oh, look how flat my hair was back then. Avril, it was a fashion.
Yeah, I mean, people would have the flat hair. Like it might be, if they were blonde, might have like the black tips at the bottom. So yeah, definitely sort of the, you know, maybe cover part of one of your eyes or something, so you had some mystique to you or something.
Yeah. And, you know, even Avril, even though she's probably known more for songs like Your Girlfriend and Complicated, she's had some really good ballads, too. I'm not sure she ever gets the acclaim she should get as a writer. She also co-wrote, we mentioned, Kelly Clarkson's Breakaway as well. She's a really all-around artist.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the Let Go album and its singles do pretty well, but you're right. I mean, especially some of the later works.
And number 7, Maroon 5, former number one, makes me wonder, really a point of Maroon 5's career where maybe you can put it on this song, where they really changed from being more of a rock band in some ways to a pop band. You know, they'd started with Harder to Breathe. That's really some rocky stuff. And then this song really changed their sound. It was, you know, almost disco-y in some ways, very synthy sounding. And then it would be 4 years later, Moves Like Jagger would come out. And since then, they've just been probably the biggest all-out pop band since. But I think it's with this song that they really showed they could be pure pop.
Ooh, Gary's going to have the One Direction fans coming after him. The biggest all-out pop band.
See, I always come from a radio standpoint, and One Direction, obviously huge in so many levels. Maroon 5 has been the pop radio band. I'll say it that way.
There we go.
Did I save myself from Twitter?
Maybe, perhaps. But yeah, for sure that... Interesting choice, too, because, I mean, obviously the Songs About Jane album was so successful that, you know, they didn't necessarily need a switch in sound. So I kind of wonder, I mean, if it was just them trying out new influences or where some of that inspiration came from. But, of course, got them their first number one, so can't be upset with that. And obviously showed that people really liked what they were doing and wanted more Maroon 5.
And we're talking so much about Idol, but who knew that a future coach of The Voice was in our midst then, because The Voice didn't exist then. So nobody knew.
We also had Gwen down there as well. So
that's
a couple Voice alum coming through.
And number 6, new to the top 10. This was the greatest gainer in sales at the time this week. Flew 18-6. Timbaland, again, featuring Kerry Hilson. The grammatically incorrect, but that didn't stop it from becoming a hit. The Way I Are.
The Way I Are. We also, I guess we learned that phrase again in Ariana Grande's Break Free, that line. And then she was like, she tried to sing it the correct way in the studio. And they were like, no, and like sing it how we wrote it. But yeah, of course, Timbaland continuing that dominance. We kind of talked about that a little earlier with Give It to Me down there at the bottom of the chart. But doing strong. And Kerry Hilson also, you know, having a good set of years as one of the R&B divas out there.
What's Kerry Hilson up to these days?
There's rumors of new projects. There's always rumors, right? The internet always kind of wonders, but anytime you mention Kerry Hilson, you always get the beehive kind of agitated because for some, I'm not sure of the reason, but there's always been something between Kerry Hilson and Beyonce. People think the song Diva is about Kerry Hilson. And there's that great clip, if you haven't seen it online. Kerry Hilson's at a red carpet event, and some magazine, I forget which one it has, I think just has... I hope it's their current issue, and it happens to have Beyonce on the cover. And they're asking her, just on the carpet, you know, when you hold the magazine up, it's just kind of as a photo op or a social media post, like, hey, Carrie reads, you know, a billboard or whoever. It wasn't billboard, but, you know, whoever it would be.
We're not in the middle of this?
Is that what you're saying? No, it's not us, luckily, this time. And so they hand it to Carrie, like, do you mind holding it up? Do you mind? And Carrie's just like, no, oh, sorry, I can't do it, can't. Like, she doesn't acknowledge that it's Beyonce on the cover. No right. one acknowledges that's the reason, but it's just kind of funny, given all that, that, you know, that Beyonce just happens to be on the cover, and Carrie just happens to be able to not support that endeavor.
So there are all these feuds back then. There was Fergie and Nelly Furtado, and apparently Beyonce and Carrie Hilson.
Yeah, but again, funny how they, you know, they're never all-out beefs. They keep it classy, keep it behind the scenes.
Well, so I'll say Billboard brought together Beyonce and Lady Gaga, though. They met at Women in Music, and that wound up with them collaborating. Telephone becoming a huge hit. So Billboard brings people together.
That'll be the new slogan, Billboard, bringing people together. It'll be our sort of contribution to the resistance movement out there, I guess.
All right, we're up to the top five now. 10 years ago this week.
Ooh, check them out.
What's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. Yes, you do. Times Square can't shine as bright as you. I swear it's true.
All right, we saw him in the top 15. How about now seeing him in the top 5? We got T-Pain's Buy You a Drink, Shawty Snappin' with Young Jock. And if you think T-Pain, I think most people probably think of this as the song. It's just such a good track. I mean, that's all you can really say. It's such an easy song to bounce along to. I mean, you got the little sort of snap melody back there, Shawty Snappin'. And it really, you know, solidified T-Pain, especially as that auto-tune pioneer that right. we know him to be.
Yeah, former number one hit at this point. 10 years later, I wonder how much of that holds up.
Okay, the sound, it does sound like dated, but it's not in a bad way. There's something still kind of, because I guess auto-tune in a way, I guess with sounding futuristic or something in general, you never feel like it sounds old.
You don't hear it anywhere now on that level. It was used so much then that you just don't hear it in hits now like you did then.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it doesn't sound sort of like robotic in like the Will I Am kind of way. It sounds a little more melodic, I think. And you know, this is something that also goes kind of unrecognized. T-Pain is a great singer without the auto-tune. If you haven't seen his Tiny Desk concert, check that out. He was in Billboard a couple years ago in The Office. Shout out to T-Pain and his vocals, which are, I think, in my opinion, underrated. Keep on moving on to number 4. On this week's chart back in 2007, again, someone we mentioned a little earlier in the podcast and have kind of referenced here without. This will be our final Fergie mention, Big Girls Don't Cry, which is on its way up the chart. Eventually will hit number 1 a little later in the summer as the 4th song released off of the Duchess album. We had mentioned Glamorous was the 3rd song, number 1 hit there as well. Big Girls Don't Cry picking up right where Glamorous left off. And a big shift from Fergie, because the first 3 songs had been a little more hip hop, rhythmic focused. Will I Am produced all 3 of those. He produced this song as well, but this song is much more of an adult, you know, ballad from Fergie, we hadn't heard before.
No, and this is, you know, I remember at the time thinking this, and you know, she'd had all these young sounding songs, both with Black Eyed Peas and then the first singles from The Duchess. This was the adult single, and she made that leap from the younger side of pop music to adult audiences, really really not that different from Madonna, going back to 1985 when Crazy for You came out after, you know, Like a Virgin and all the controversial
Material Girl.
Yeah, all that sound. Adult audiences saw a totally different side, the singer side and adult themes and lyrics, and it's a great ballad overall. But this is really a song that I think really helped bring her to such a newer level that, again, would help the Black Eyed Peas be so big after that.
And, of course, a shout-out to kind of a random piece of chart trivia, but I think something that's kind of fun is obviously the song Big Girls Don't Cry hitting number one. There was also another song called Big Girls Don't Cry that hit number one way back when by the Four Seasons, back in the 1960s it would have been.
Yeah.
So kind of one of those fun instances where it's not the same song that hit number one, but they share the same title. So kind of a rare occurrence too.
Oh, I'm gonna find a similarity here. Again, Billboard's bringing people together. Both Katy Perry, see how that's caught on already.
Yeah, so catchy.
Katy Perry and Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift have both had songs in recent years that borrow the titles of earlier hits. Bad Blood. Taylor Swift was a number one in the 70s. Different song.
Oh yeah, by Neil Sedaka.
Neil Sedaka. Yeah. And California Girls, spelled with the U. Beach Boys. So there's something that Katie and Taylor could agree on. Borrowing old
I guess
song
they'd
titles.
Have to agree on some facts. Yeah.
We'll start with, if we ever get them in the same room, start with that.
And then figure out the same planet. Yeah. All right. Moving on to number three this week. Ooh, a classic kind of that I think most people remember that Hey There Delilah was massive at the time. The Plain White Tees coming in at number three. The song also climbing up the chart, eventually would hit number one as well.
You hear all this other stuff we're hearing here in the top 40. It's a lot of hip hop. 10 years ago, there's some rock. This stands out because it's just a simple little folk tune, pretty much. Maybe that helped it cut through. Obviously, it was so catchy, but it really stood out just for its the more low key sound.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, you know, I definitely agree with, because we had seen in the past 3-4 years. I mean, a huge amount of hip hop taking over the charts. From 50 Cent, Chingy, Snoop was up in there, Ludacris and Missy Elliott, everybody. And this also was kind of that turning point where pop sort of starts to take back some of the ground that it had lost in the early part of the decade. I mean, in about a year and a half, we'll see songs like Fireflies by Owl City pop right through. So some things that, you know, in this environment you would never think could be hits, just, you know, staying the course and making their way up there.
And you could even draw a line to Mumford & Sons and some of the whole Lumineers that would come later, at least bringing back folk in some ways to pop hits. So this was sort of an early version of that for the late 2000s.
I guess you kind of always do have that one song a year that sort of pops through. Maybe like 06, it was Bad Day by Daniel Powder, getting some help from Idol.
Right.
You're Beautiful by James Blunt at the same time. So maybe the Plain White Tees are just, you know, riding that wave up. All right, but they are, of course, at this point, at least blocked by, guess what's a combination of rap and rock in a sense? The Shop Boys, Party Like a Rock Star. So, obviously, I'm sure everybody remembers kind of the somewhat original dance that went with it. You're supposed to do the rock star kind of, you know, the head nod and everything like that. Shop Boys just getting a huge hit again.
It sounds like another hit that, again, in a YouTube era, it could have benefited from that. But again, YouTube was pretty new. What was YouTube showing? What could you get on YouTube in 2007?
Well, what could you order on a YouTube back in the day?
What is this YouTube?
There's always music around, but I think there was a lot less just because, I mean, you got to remember the iPhone is like brand new at this time. So there weren't a lot of devices in people's hands that could create that kind of content. I mean, people, I think, were doing more like Photoshop and more like image-based stuff at the time.
Yeah.
They were sharing around.
And it was definitely desktop as opposed to mobile was just really in its infancy at that point.
Yeah, I mean, people had kind of camera phones for a while, but they couldn't hold the same kind of stuff. You didn't connect to the internet because back then, you know, it was like, oh, the data charge would have been enormous. So, you know, no one really shared that kind of stuff around. So it was just more, you know, produced content rather than this kind of stuff. But you're right. I mean, had this song been out in the time that syncs were around, you could see it being synced to a lot of stuff. And that brings us to the number one song on the Hot 100, the week of July 14th, 2007. Had been number one for a little while there and holding strong in its sixth week at number one. We got the one, the only, this. Because when the sunshine will shine. Of course, summer 2007 belonged to Rihanna, who I will also call Rihanna from here on out, who is number one with Umbrella for the sixth week. It'll be number one again the following week, so that'll make it 7 weeks overall that Rihanna had Umbrella at number one featuring Jay-Z. And kind of fun that this is the song we're going to talk about last because, I mean, you look back at Rihanna's career, this was definitely the song that transformed her from star into superstar.
Yeah. It was her second number one. So she was at number one a year earlier with SOS. So we talked at the beginning of this podcast how she was back at number 39 with Shut Up and Drive, reworking New Order. So SOS reworked Soft Cell. This is the song, yeah, that I think really she became the Rihanna we've known since in terms of her sound.
First time being in the Grammys winner circle, so that's huge for her, and really gave the momentum to the Good Girl Gone Bad album that we see. We had Umbrella, I mean, Don't Stop the Music is coming pretty soon after this as well.
Right,
there'll be the reissue that's coming out the following year, so that'll give us Take a Bow and Disturbia. So, you know, Rihanna keeps on piling the hits. Then we'll see, you know, later Live Your Life with T.I. in that same vein. And I mean, from there, it's just nonstop.
And, you know, no one could have known how big she's going to become at this point. 10 years ago, which is not a huge amount of time, this was her fifth top 10 hit. Now she's up to 31 top 10s. This is her second number one. She's now up to 14 number ones. She's now third all time in both of those categories. So third most top 10s, third most number ones. No one could have predicted the success she was going to have over these 10 years. She was still, you know, really a you know, in some ways a new rising artist with Umbrella. Look where she is 10 years later, below the Beatles and Madonna for most top 10s, and the Beatles and Mariah for most number ones.
And I think one of the things that's helped Rihanna so much is there are a couple things, but I think in particular, sort of her authenticity is something people love. She is just, if you follow her on any social media, if you ever see her, she's just a real pop star. I mean, she's not, you know, she doesn't polish it for the camera or try to, you know, act, you know, what she's not. I mean, she just is who she is. She embraces it. And I think people just love that about her. And also, I think people also appreciate, you know, I mean, the diversity of audiences that she brings a lot, because, you know, she has sort of that, obviously, that pop lean where it's just kind of a straight, you know, gloss performance. She's obviously so in demand by so many hip hop artists to do the features on their tracks. I mean, she's got attitude. She's got that grit. She can do also some things that I think are underrated on her sort of native island sound. Songs like Man Down, we saw with Work, especially.
Right. And that was a year
to a mainstream audience.
And that was a year after 4 or 5 Seconds, a folk tune with Paul McCartney and Kanye.
Yeah, I mean, she fits right in there as well. Obviously, teaming up with legends like, you know, Jay-Z. Here we see with Umbrella. I mean, two songs with Eminem, both of which went to number one. I mean, so versatile and great. We see her even with Dance a little bit, Only Girl, and some of those songs like that. I mean, she is just, you know, the all-around, all-star pop star.
And a sign of a lasting hit, Umbrella. If you tell someone now that you need to grab your umbrella, isn't there a good chance they're going to start singing the Ella
hook? Yeah. And it's amazing because this song actually, as some people may know, was originally written for Britney Spears. They were going to give it to Britney. She had passed for whatever reason. And Rihanna just took it, and the Dream said that when he heard Rihanna record the Ella, Ella, Ella part, he just knew that that was for her, and that was that. And ever since then, you know, she's been off to the races.
And the Dream also said that it was sort of a play on reverb. That it was sort of the homemade version of reverb. She didn't have
the poor man's reverb.
Yeah, if you couldn't get good reverb, you have to sing it like that. So it's sort of a little joke that it became probably the most recognizable hook of the song.
That's all it took.
All right, so there it is. 10 years ago, Rihanna was number one. 10 years later, Rihanna's still huge. So some things change, some things don't. But fun to look back.
Also, 10 years later, Rihanna's number four. So
we could be
talking about Rihanna being number one once again.
All right, so that was fun the last couple of weeks. Looking back at 1997, 2007. Maybe we'll do this again on the podcast going forward. Flashback to the Hot 100 in different years.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to see. You know, I mean, especially where people have ended up since then. I mean, who's still around, who was hot at the time, who you forgot about. I mean, It's always kind of cool to take a trip down memory lane, and hopefully you guys enjoyed walking down with us.
All right, so next week we're back to our usual format. We're going to be looking at the current Billboard Hot 100 Top 10.
Can you believe Despacito is still number one?
we're calling that now?
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, I got to say this, Trevor. You know, last time we talked about the current Hot 100, a couple weeks ago, we talked about which artist between Drake and Taylor Swift could get to 30 top 10 Hot 100.
And I
next.
Noticed that Gary had put up a poll
just happened
on
to do that.
His Twitter.
I wanted to see. Yeah, so I said Drake. You said Taylor Swift.
I did. I saw we got about 3,000 votes.
Yeah.
Like, it was up there. All right. And Gary, go ahead and let me know.
Did I have to?
Who?
Since you asked.
Who people think.
No,
I don't
believe it. It was really close. But Drake, 54%. Taylor Swift, 46%.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Bots.
All bots. All Drizzy bots.
It was close.
All right. Well, I mean, it's okay because 54% of people are going to be wrong. Taylor, you better not let me down, girl.
No, people said the same thing. Drake puts out so much more music, but then Taylor could put out an album with a whole bunch of hits. So who knows?
I mean, well, I guess we'll have to find out. I mean, TS6 is hopefully coming this year, so that'll change the game.
All right. Let's since we're back in 2007, what song, Trevor, that wasn't in the top 40 but was on the chart should we close with?
I'm trying to think if I want something that's incredibly appropriate 2007 or just something that was a hit at the time. You know what? We already mentioned Taylor Swift just now. Let's look at the number 42 song, so two spots shy of us being able to talk about it. Only her second single at the time, one of the great cuts off of the Taylor Swift debut album. Let's close with Teardrops on My Guitar.
I'll put this picture down and maybe get some sleep tonight. 'Cause here's a reason for the teardrops on my guitar. The only one who's got enough for me to break my heart is the song in the car. I keep singing, don't know why.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.